Session number 11763, Captain M.L. Crawford, Reel 2.
Captain Crawford, Reel 2.
From Taranto, east of Malta, to Tripoli, we had very precise information of the route of this convoy, and three submarines were put across the line of the convoy, line of passage of the convoy, with Upholder in the middle and Unbeaten, and I can't remember the third one now, either side. And the fourth submarine, Ursula, was put about 50 miles further to the west. These three submarines were positioned so as to be able to carry out a night attack on the convoy, and the fourth submarine was in a position where she would be able to do a daylight attack in the early morning. Well, in the early hours of the morning, we received a message from Unbeaten on SST, that's underwater telephone system, to say that they had sighted the convoy and gave a position. And so we were fully keyed up waiting for this. And again, fortunately, I was on watch and I saw these three ships with their destroyers coming along. They were some way off, but the captain came on the bridge. We closed at speed. It was quite a heavy swell running, and so those small submarines yaw tremendously when on the surface in this swell, so it made firing torpedoes extremely difficult. However, Wanklyn managed to fire his first torpedo at the bow of one of the ships. By the time he was ready to fire the second, we'd yawed towards the stern, so he fired one there, and then on the way back he fired two more torpedoes. And at a range of about 4,000 to 5,000 yards. We then dived. I think Wanklyn was keen to stay on the surface, but as our normal drill had been to clear the bridge and dive immediately after firing a night attack, we had all started going down, and so Wanklyn came down and dived. But shortly after, we heard two explosions, and as nothing came anywhere near us, we surfaced, and Wanklyn saw that one ship had gone and one was lying stopped, and the third one was going off to the westwards. So there was a stopped ship with a couple of destroyers or three destroyers circling round it and going alongside trying to pick up survivors. We had to dive again then, because you can't reload torpedoes on the surface in a heavy swell. So we dived, reloaded our tubes, and then came up, and by this time it was daylight, or just getting light. And so we started to close in on this stopped liner with destroyers still circling. And just as we were in a position to fire, we were put down by one of the destroyers coming at us. We were by this time so close to the liner that by the time we got up again, we would have been too close to fire. So Anklin said, right, we'll go underneath, out the other side, turn round, and fire from the other side. So this we proceeded to do, and got ourselves into position on the other side, and fired two torpedoes, which immediately caused the ship to sink. Now this was quite interesting, because unbeknown to us, the Unbeaten, who had sighted the convoy initially, had decided to come along the track the convoy was taking, and Unbeaten was just about to fire from the other side when he heard our two torpedoes explode, and was naturally rather irritated, to say the least, because he thought he had a nice sitting duck there. However, the aim and object was to destroy these ships, and they both went down. That was the important thing. The third ship was the faster of the three, the Vulcania, and she, I think, had increased speed, and although Ursula got in an attack on her, I think he slightly underestimated the speed and so missed astern. But two out of the three was not a bad effort, and we were back in Malta literally in about within 72 hours. So it was quite an successful operation.
And you've just said that was in September 1941.
And I think that really brings to an end of my time in Upholder. We had one unsuccessful special operation off Palermo earlier in August, landing commandos to blow up a train or a railway bridge, but they were spotted when they got ashore, and we were lucky to get them back. And
can you say what kind of a man Wanklin was? Was he a disciplinarian, or did he rule the ship with an easy hand?
He was fortunately, I don't think he had to be a very severe disciplinarian, because everybody seemed to like him, respected him, and he was a very quiet, calm man and a very pleasant man, and we had no problems at all discipline-wise.
Did we say that the two ships sunk in that convoy were called the Neptunia and the Oceania?
Neptunia and Oceania.
How much of a strain was it at this time on these operations against the North African convoys?
Well, the actual operation side, in many ways, was almost more peaceful than the times in Malta, because the air raids were getting increasing in numbers and in strength, and the bombing was getting heavier. So one's time in harbour was not peaceful. But until I left in November, it never got so bad that the submarines had to dive during the day and sit on the bottom while they were in harbour, which is what they had to do later in the beginning of 42. But as I say, my time there, I only know this from hearsay, I left in November, beginning of November, to return to this country for my CO's course.
I think that whilst you're in the Mediterranean, Upholder nearly attacked a fellow submarine.
That's quite correct. We were leaving Malta to go on patrol. naturally we had all our own submarine movements given to us, and so we weren't expecting any friendly submarine in the area as we were leaving Malta. And we sighted a submarine, and we altered course and got the torpedoes ready to attack her. Wanklin said he thought this might be a T-boat, one of our T-boats, although we weren't expecting any. We challenged Morse signal to challenge the other submarine. We got no reply. We challenged again and got no reply. And fortunately, Wankton decided that it was a T-boat. And of course, when we returned, we reported it by WT, and we were told, probably, or certainly learnt when we got back to harbour, that in fact it was the Truant who had been fairly heavily depth-charged, I think down off Tripoli area, and her WT was out of action and so had been unable to report her movements and was returning to Malta early. So it was probably a lucky escape all round.
What was the policy about attacking Axis warships?
Oh, they were prime targets, certainly.
But not so important as the merchantmen, presumably.
I suppose, from the point of view of the actual war effort, a good heavily loaded merchant ship would be almost more valuable, certainly.
Did you attack any warships in the upholder?
We did have one attack on a cruiser earlier on. Two cruisers, I think, were going along at over 20 knots. The visibility was very poor. This was off the northwest tip of Sicily. The two cruisers were travelling, as I said, about 20, 22 knots. Visibility poor, and so it was a real snap attack. And just as we were about to fire, the AS operator gave the cruisers an even higher speed, and Wankton was able to adjust the angle, aim off, just enough before they passed the line of sight, and he did fire and claimed a hit. I'm not certain whether it was ever really substantiated, but he did claim a hit in this attack.
Were these Italian or German?
Italian cruisers.
Do you know what month that would have been?
Around about the spring of 1941.
You said you went back to the UK to do your CEO's course.
Yes.
And I think that whilst you were there, you did duties in an ex-German submarine.
I was, having done my CEO's course, before I was waiting to take over an H-boat, the CEO of the submarine Graf, which was, I think, U-boat U-570, and we had a British crew on board. The CEO went sick, and so the first lieutenant took over as CEO, and I was sent as first lieutenant for just about a week.
What impression did you get of German submarines as compared with British ones from that experience?
They had their pluses and their minuses. The pluses were superb periscopes. They seemed to be much better than ours. The minuses were the comfort on board and the wetness on the bridge in the slightest sea. It seemed even a very small sea or swell, and the water was breaking over the bridge, which made them most uncomfortable. And the actual wardroom was also particularly uncomfortable because the passage from the crew compartment to the control room was right through the middle of the wardroom. And so any time any rating wanted to go on watch, everybody in the wardroom had to move.
I don't know if you saw a film that was shown on television recently called
Das Boot.
Yes. What impression did you get from that of operating in German submarines? Did you find it true to life from your own experience?
I think it was a very good film. Naturally, all the flooding and that sort of thing of the motor room was rather overdone, but I think it gave a very good impression of the discomfort in a U-boat, certainly. And I would think, fortunately, we weren't on the receiving end of our AS forces, but I should think it gave a very good impression of what the German U-boats had to go through in the later stages of the war, certainly.
To me, it gave a rather horrific impression of life on board a submarine. Presumably it wasn't as bad on British submarines.
No, I don't think... I don't think we had... I mean, some submarines naturally had a very bad time. We all had our fairly heavy depth charging, which is no fun. But I don't think we suffered anything like to the extent that the German U-boats suffered against the AS forces.
Did you get the kind of bodily infestations which they seem to have?
No, I don't think we did.
Can you continue with your own account of your own experiences in the war, please?
Right, well, having done this week in Graf, I was then sent in command of H-50, which operated from Rossey, but we were mainly on detached service over in Londonderry to give AS training to all the convoy escort groups that were based in Londonderry, and I had 3 months of doing that before I was relieved and sent to join what was then P-51 at Barrow, another U-class submarine, and she was well advanced through her building, and we just had 6 weeks in Barrow, during which time the ship's company joined. And we then sailed off to Holyrock to do our workup. We had a period of workup, finishing with a workup patrol northeast of the Shetlands, during which, unfortunately, trying to train our watch divers to surface and dive the submarine. When we were diving after taking a sun sight to find out our position, the petty officer on watch unfortunately pulled the wrong lever, and we finished up blowing HP air into a tank with both vent and Kingston shut. And this damaged the tank and our battery. And so we then had to go to Sheerness for have the tank repaired before we set off for Malta or for the Mediterranean again. I think perhaps it did a slight good turn in the end, because I was sent for by Admiral Max Horton, who was flag officer of submarines at the time. And I must say, I was expecting the most frightful rocket, but he took it very well and said, well, now, can you suggest anything that might prevent this happening again? So I made a suggestion that the lever for operating the valves for this particular tank should have some corrugations around it, so even in dim light, the operator could feel which tank it was that he was pulling the lever for. And this was incorporated in all later submarines. So out of bad might have come a little good. And then we sailed for Gibraltar, and we sailed in a howling gale from Portsmouth, and going down the channel, my first lieutenant, who'd had a wisdom tooth out in the morning, suddenly started bleeding from his tooth, and we couldn't stop it. We tried padding it and everything else, but we could not stop it. So we decided, as we had another 10 days at sea, we better call in to Falmouth and see if something could be done about it. So we had to divert into Falmouth, and he was sent ashore to the local hospital, and they managed to stop it. And we sailed a few hours later and continued on our way. We then arrived in Gibraltar, where the 8th submarine flotilla, with HMS Maidstone as depot ship, was based. And we were sent from there to do a short working up patrol off Malaga, which is really just to get us used to the Mediterranean conditions, or get the ship's company. I mean, I hoped I was used to them, but helped get the ship's company used to them. And then after that, we were sent up to Toulon for a covering operation to watch what the French would do for Operation Torch, the North African landing. While we were on patrol up there, just after we had got up there, for some reason, at sort of 1 o'clock in the morning, I was awake and decided to go up on the bridge. And when I got up there, almost immediately, I saw something which I didn't expect. So I said to the officer, "Watch, what is that over there?" And he said, "It's an island." So I was not very impressed with this, as I knew there was no island about there. So it sounded the night alarm, and as soon as the engines stopped, we could hear the intakes of a destroyer. Air intakes for the turbines, etc., of a destroyer. And so we hurriedly dived. But as we dived, I saw that they were flashing at us, so they'd obviously seen us as well. And so that was the beginning of rather a lengthy period of being harassed off Toulon. And a couple of days later, the two small destroyers patrolling up and down off Toulon, and as they passed us, I decided to alter course out to seaward, and having done the turn and listened to hear whether anything was about, nothing being heard, I put up the periscope, and there, very close to us, was a destroyer pointing absolutely right at us. And of course he immediately came in as we decided to go deep and let fly with his depth charges, which were extremely close, and we really started plummeting into the depths. And we had to blow our main ballast, and we finally pulled up with the deep diving gauge just about on the stops. And the deep diving gauge is 350 feet. And the safe diving depth that we were cocktail to use for these submarines was 200 feet. So we were naturally getting a bit anxious. However, as I say, fortunately, we did just manage to get control of her. Then, of course, having got a lot of air in your main ballast tanks, as you start to come up, naturally you send out a lot of bubbles as the air pushes out. And so we had to stay deep for a considerable time while we slowly crept away to the southward to get clear of these destroyers. As I say, eventually we managed to come up slowly and creep away, but we had considerable damage. I mean, our Q tank was damaged once again. Navigation lights had been blown off up top, not that we needed them on patrol. And, of course, a mass of caulking off the bulkheads and so on, and various other electrical damage. But we recovered and got away with it. And eventually, after Operation Torch, we returned to Gibraltar and again had to have a minor repairs done in the dockyard there. We then, having completed those repairs, we then set off for Malta to join up with the squadron to which we really were going to join. And we had a dummy deck of provisions right through the submarine, because, of course, at this time, October, November 42, Malta was still extremely short of supplies, so every submarine going there crammed themselves full with whatever we could, dehydrated vegetables. And as I say, we had a dummy deck right through the submarine. And so really our instructions going to Malta were not to attack anything unless it was something really vital. And of course on the way we sighted a U-boat at night. And so we were getting all ready to attack that. But as we were ready to attack, the U-boat sighted us and turned away. And so the attack was aborted, and we proceeded on our way to Malta. The rest of the passage, I think, was quite straightforward. Then we did our first patrol in December 42 from Malta, southwest of Sicily. We attacked two convoys, and I'm sad to say that they fired seven torpedoes and missed. Then in January, we were out on patrol again, this time down off west of Tripoli, where we had our first successes and got two ships. They were only small ones, but nevertheless, two ships, 1,500 tons.